Welcome, everybody, to the class on Parshas Balak, 5768. What I'd like to do today is return to a topic that I think we began maybe 2 years ago. It's not particularly about Balak, but it's about a theme which I believe is central to the Sefer Bamidbar, the whole book. It is also central to Musar and Jewish outlook on everything. You may recall the terms Klal and Prat, which we used to throw around quite a bit, I think 2 years ago. Klal means the whole and Prat means the part. As I delve further and further into Jewish thought and Musar, I realize the great importance of this composition of things, if you will. Everything in Judaism is an individual part related to a whole. The Torah, for example, is an entire whole. It is all unified by God who wrote it. And yet everything in the Torah is broken up into a particular verse or a particular law or a particular idea, but yet it's all contained, it all fits together to create a seamless and a complete whole. People are that way. We are each individuals, and yet we are connected by soul. We are all part of this one huge soul, and yet each one of us is a fragment of that soul. On practical terms, there seems to be a dichotomy between Prat and Klal. Because if I am a Prat, and I'm a unique Prat, then on a certain level, I have nothing to do with the other Prat. I'm totally different from my neighbor over here. We look different, we think different, we talk different, and yet we're all connected, we're all part of that whole. So there seems to be a dichotomy. The Sefer Bamidbar is full of this tension between the Klal and the Prat. This was a proposal that we made several years ago. In the last several weeks, we've had people starting trouble. Korach, for example, started a rebellion against the Klal, against Moshe. Moshe represented Hashem. Korach, an individual, was going off on his own. People were complaining against Hashem. That's a prat rebelling against the Klal. In this week's Parsha, we have a non-Jewish king, Balak, who's hiring this prophet, Bilam, to curse the Jewish people, trying to undermine God and his people. It's very dangerous when a prat feels itself disenchanted or disconnected with the Klal. What I'd like to do, since this is a very big topic, is I would like to focus our discussion of Klal and Prat on one aspect, and that is the aspect of Jewish leadership. Leadership in general, but specifically Jewish leadership. I was thinking about it this week, and something very amazing struck me. Who is a Jewish leader? And I'm thinking from my orientation, growing up in the yeshiva world, growing up not from my infancy, but as I grew into my teens and young adulthood, and I was very, very much enamored by the concept of the gadol, of the great person. And something hit me just this week, that we think of a great Jewish leader, a righteous rabbi, pious person, as representing the Klal, representing the entire Jewish people. And yet, he is unmistakably a very, very uniquely developed prat. And everybody looks to him. Why is that? Why do we all look to this one man or these several men in a community? It might be one or others. Why is the whole Klal looking at one prat? Doesn't that seem paradoxical? If we are a Jewish people, shouldn't leadership of the Jewish people be something where the prat is dissolved? Where you don't see the prat, where you don't have everybody in the group trying to find out what did Rabbi so-and-so say. Isn't that a paradox of sorts? I might not be making myself so clear, because it's an esoteric, it's a very abstract concept. But let us look at some examples in the previous parshios we've had and take a look at what we would all say are people that were leaders. And yet look at the dynamics between Klal and Prat that they portrayed. Shlach, going back a few weeks, we had some spies. These spies are testified by the Torah, Kulam Anashim Roshei B'nei Yisrael Hema. They were all men who were leaders, heads of the Jewish people, of the tribes. As we had learned in Mesilas Yesharim this year, our text, The Path of the Just, based on the Zohar, these Meraglim were affected by their desire for kavod, for honor. When they heard that they were going to be going into the land of Israel, they were worried about their position. There's going to be a restructuring. Now they are heads of tribes. But when they get to the land of Israel and everyone's going to be taking their territory, there was a fear that they would lose their position. And based on that, they fabricated this report that we cannot possibly enter the land. We will be destroyed by the giants. According to the Zohar, it was their desire for kavod that affected the way they communicated and they influenced the entire nation. And the entire nation was taken by them and they cried, and that was the decree, that they would not enter the promised land. What a frightening thought of heads of tribes being able to influence a people in such a way. Korach, also a great man, a learned man, a respected man, a wealthy man, a Levi. Now he advanced an argument, which is an interesting spin on the Klal Prat issue. He said to Moshe, Kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, the entire congregation are holy, ubesocham Hashem, and amongst them is God, umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem, why do you have to rise above the assembly of God? Now that's suggesting, and maybe it's got some validity, why do we need to have a leader? After all, we're all holy. I understand if the people don't know what to do. I understand if the people are uninformed or uneducated and they need someone to teach them. But you're not talking about those kind of people. You're talking about everyone who stood at Mount Sinai. Everyone who is fully aware of God. Why does there have to be a leader? Interesting question. And yet, something went wrong. Because Korach influenced also very, very important people. 250 tribal leaders themselves. And yet, God destroyed them because they had lost sight of the Klal. How did that happen? How did this great man lead so many other great people to oblivion? Let's take a look at a beautiful portrait of a leader in Parshas Chukas. Aaron passes away, last week's Parsha, and the Torah says that upon his passing, at the end of chapter 20, Vayiru kol ha'edo ki gava'a Aaron, when the entire assembly saw that Aaron had perished, Vayivku es Aaron shloshim yom, they wept for Aaron 30 days. It's probably the source for the shloshim. Vayivku es Aaron shloshim yom kol beis Yisrael. Who wept? The entire house of Israel. Says Rashi, Kol Beis Yisrael, Ha'anashim ve'hanashim, men and women, Lefi Shoya Aaron Rodev Shalom, because Aaron pursued peace, Umatil Ahava, Bein Ba'ale Meriva, and he placed love between people who were in quarrels, who Bein Ishla Ishta, between man and wife. He was a marriage counselor. And everyone felt his presence, and everyone wept bitterly at his absence. That's a portrayal of another kind of a leader. Bilam was a great man. When the Torah says that no other prophet arose in Israel, Rashi says, quoting the sages, no prophet ever rose in Israel like Moshe. So say the sages, among Israel, there was no great prophet like Moshe. But there was a prophet among the other nations, Bilam. As if to say that Bilam approached the level of Moshe. Great man. Prophet. Could speak to God. That's nothing to sneeze at. And yet, what was Bilam all about? Let's see if I can curse God's people. And even when God tells me that I can't, let's see, maybe I can get him to change his mind. And something that sticks out from the recesses of my memory that part of his strategy was, if he could see the people, then he could curse them. He goes to try to curse them three times. The first time, the Torah says, chapter 22, verse 41, Vayihi vaboker, vayikach Balak es Bilam, vayaleu bamos Boal, vayar misham ksei ha'am. And it was in the morning, Balak took Bilam and brought him up to the heights of Baal, and from there he saw the edge of the people. It was limited in what he could see. When he wasn't successful the first time around, God possessed him and caused words of blessing to come out instead of the curses that he had wanted to give. The second time around, already he says, let me go to a different place, and maybe from there I will be able to curse them better. So it says in 23:13, Vayomer elav Balak, Balak said to him, Lechano iti al makom acher, come with me to another place, Asher tirenu misham, you'll be able to see them from there. Efes kotseu tire, you will still only see a part, v'chulo lo sire, but you will not be able to see all of them. But it's better than the time before. Somehow, if he can see more people, he can affect more people. Remember the book, Yertl the Turtle? He wanted to get on top of the pile so he could be, however high you were, however many people you could see, you would be the king over that many people. Mm-hmm. That's what this reminds me of. And then the third time, he went to a higher mountain. Verse 28, Balak took Bilam to the top of Peor that looks over the entire wasteland. I remember somewhere that he thought that the more people he could see, the more he could influence. This is another concept of a leader trying to take control, getting people under his purview. You can affect them somehow. It's different modes of leadership that we see. Then Pinchas, next week, give a little preview. We also have a beautiful portrayal of a leader in Moshe's request to Hashem that he appoint a new leader to succeed him, which we know ended up being Yehoshua. But the way that Moshe requested from Hashem to appoint a leader is very, very important. On page 888, 2715 and 16, Vayedaber Moshe el Hashem lemor, Yifkod Hashem Elokei Haruchos L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'et. Moshe spoke to Hashem saying, may Hashem, God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the assembly. What is the meaning of that praise? The spirits of all flesh. Rashi, again, often quoted. What is the most important characteristic for a Jewish leader? Moshe said to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the World, Galui lefanecha, it is revealed before you, Dato shel kol echad v'echad, everyone's unique personality. V'einon domin zelazet, no two people are alike. Menei alehem manhig, appoint over them a leader, Shiehe sovel kol echad v'echad lefi dato, that will be able to bear or carry every person according to his personality, according to his opinion. That was the only thing he wrote on the job search. We need somebody that can get along with people. Interesting request. Of course, Yehoshua had many, many other virtues, but this is the one that Moshe was most concerned about at this point. So we've got all different portraits of leaders in this book. Some that seem to have gone sour, and some that seem to have blossomed. What is the secret behind proper leadership, and how do we reconcile the klal and the prat, the emphasis on the entirety of the Jewish people, and yet the emphasis on that unique individual that can be such a leader? We know that concern for the people is paramount for Jewish leadership. Rabbi Luzzatto says it in two different places regarding the virtue of abstinence. On page 97, he says, those singular individuals among the nation whose desire is to attain the closeness of the Blessed One and to bring through their merits spiritual benefits to the remaining masses who are dependent upon them. Okay? He describes individuals who desire to attain closeness to God and to bring through their merits, benefits to the remaining masses who are dependent upon them. Let's keep that description in mind. And also, in the virtue of piety, of chassidus, he writes on page 140, a second rationale behind the virtue of piety is the concern for the good of the generation. For it is befitting that the actions of a pious person should be directed toward the good of his entire generation, enhancing their standing and shielding them from punishment. This is of paramount importance, a recurring theme. A righteous, pious person has to care about others. I've been trying to set the tone for another source that I'd like to share with you. We've all heard about Rav Yerucham, as we spent at least a year talking about him, Rav Yerucham Lubavitch, the Mashgiach of the Mir Yeshiva in Poland. Well, he had a student of only 2 years who was so moved, so uplifted by his Rebbe, that he went on to become probably the bearer of the torch in terms of Musar in his generation, recently passed away from us, and that's Rabbi Shlomo Volbe, who was originally from Switzerland. But he ended up learning in Mir for 2 years under Rav Yerucham, came to Eretz Yisrael, and he, just ask anybody, was known as the Mashgiach. And he wrote a sefer, which was taken from his lectures that he gave at the yeshivas, called Ali Shur. There's two volumes. The first one I was familiar with in the yeshiva was about this thick. The second one, which I've almost never looked at, is about this thick. But anyway, he writes, and it's very psychological, very interesting. In fact, he tells us something that I didn't understand. Rav Yerucham had a sefer called Chochma U'Musar, Wisdom and Musar. So he explains the meaning of the title. He says, the real hardcore is Musar. That's when you can just tell people, you know, this is what we should be, this is what we should do. Something called Chachma, wisdom, is a little bit more philosophical, where we can sit back and talk about it and come up with all kinds of theories. They're all true, but they sometimes don't necessarily motivate us to change. So Rav Yerucham apparently said that in earlier days you could just give over Musar. But then he saw that he had to add a little Chachma to it. And Rav Yerucham is lamenting that nowadays there's a little more Chachma than Musar. In some places you might just hear Chachma. But let me share with you, what I have here is a sefer that I was just lent by Rabbi Avraham Horvitz, the wonderful chaplain. He lives in Dunwoody. He's been serving as an army chaplain for many, many years. His father was one of the founders of a yeshiva for Bali Teshuva in Yerushalayim in the 60s, of Horvitz. And he has graciously kept me informed of new svarim. And they just came out with an edition of Mesilas Yesharim with notes where the editor of this particular volume went through all the writings of Rav Volbe and pulled out relevant statements to the particular chapter and verses of the Mesilas Yesharim. So I'm not myself that well versed in Rav Volbe's svarim, but this is helping me appreciate things that he said. So he talks about the following. I think you'll find it fascinating, but he really gets to the core of what we're trying to grasp. This is in reference to the first quote that I took from Precious, from the Virtue of Abstinence, about a righteous person caring and being concerned with the welfare of the others in his generation. So this is what Rav Volbe has to say. A great person is not an official title. In fact, a great person doesn't necessarily have to have an official position. In all generations, there were wise and pious Jews. Some of them may have chopped wood or drawn water for their livelihood. But they stood as national poskim, decisors of halacha, and as examples and models for everyone. Such as the Chofetz Chaim in the previous generation, the Chazon Ish in our generation. This harmony, this wondrous compilation of greatness in learning and righteousness in conduct is a sign for Gedolei Yisrael, for great leaders of Israel. Their spiritual stature, their approach to learning, their approach to halacha, we can see their practical Musar approach and the way they live, and they have each enriched us in a unique pathway of service of Hashem. Now, he then goes to the young man, the young child, the young student, shall we say. Every young person has this ambition to do something for the klal, and he is ready to sacrifice to do these works. They may be willing to travel to the far ends of the earth to establish a community or what have you. Now listen to this. But for the majority, this aspiration comes from a very self-centered position. A young person is looking for a place to be uplifted. His world, it seems, very narrow, and he wants to expand it. He wants to accomplish great things. Inside his heart, he has a dream that one day he will become a great hero who will save the world. There's a lot of good dreams like this, but at its core, this dream itself does not stem from love of the klal. It really stems from self-love. As years go by, this dream might dissipate. What is true love of the klal? It's a high level. It's not something that a person will reach at the beginning of his path of service. This is not a simple type of a feeling. It has nothing to do with outward accomplishments. It has to do, true love of the klal has to do with a certain inner approach, something deep, something where a person identifies with the whole world inside of him, and it causes him to have a feeling of responsibility and of care and concern for them. In other words, if a person says, well, I've accomplished a lot for the klal, I have taught thousands of people, I have given lectures to thousands of people, that itself may not be avas klal. That may be for the sense of accomplishment, of achievement. Look what I've done with myself. Look who I am. Look how many people know me and recognize me. That is not avas klal. How then does a person aspire to and reach true avas klal? Well, first, he has to rise above his own material, physical inclinations. The love of physical pleasure, the love of honor, the love of money. He doesn't live for these things. But most of all, this comes from a person who has achieved inner peace, menucha pnimis, inner peace. It's very psychological. This is a person that can see the klal and become a man of the klal. I write this, he says, in order to preclude erroneous definitions of this. People who are small-minded usually get mixed up between personal drives and communal matters. They see themselves as doing great things for the klal, but what they're really doing is they're using the klal to accomplish great things for themselves. They think that the klal is something external, statistics, geography, and has nothing to do with what goes on inside of their own soul. In fact, quite the opposite. People think that somebody who doesn't really like to concentrate and focus on his own spiritual growth, that is a person that should be out there and influencing the tzibur. He's a doer. He's a go-getter. He's a macher. He's the person that should really be doing the communal work. He's the ish haklal. He is the man of the klal. You know, if he just sits in his corner and does his own thing, I'm talking about in spiritual ways, he studies, he introspects, he studies Musar, that person, he's never going to amount to much because he's not a leader. That's what people think. Therefore, we come to say that that is not the way Chazal look at it. The pathway of growth of a Torah personality that we are trying to develop in our book. This is a book. Alei Shur was a book. It was kind of like a modern-day Mesilas Yesharim for yeshiva students. This book brings to the notion of becoming a ish klal through internal peace, through personal work, personal introspection, in a way which is very modest, in a way which shuns publicity and leadership and position. Now, if a person who develops himself thus does get called upon to act for the klal, he will do so, but he will do so in a manner where he does not sacrifice his own personal peace and his own avoda, his own service. He will serve the tzibur through his service. He will take a different path than many public people do. He will stay away from publicity if he can. He wants to be an uman mutzna, a humble professional, or a humble artist, is what he says. Okay. That's basically the gist. This speaks to my quest for this issue, klal and prat. As I said before, it seems like a paradox, and yet we see why, as everything in the spiritual realm is very different than the material and external way of looking at things. Our leaders that we looked at, we're talking about people who did not necessarily work on themselves to clean out the very, very basic earthy drives of kavod, of desire for honor and for jealousy. These are the basic things that have to be cleaned up within the spiritual personality first. If a person embarks on leadership when he has not cleaned away those things, he's going to end up influencing the people, all right, but influencing them in the negative way. The Meraglim, Korach, not to mention Bilam and Balak, who didn't even have the Torah as their guide. But when you talk about people such as Aaron and Yehoshua and Moshe, these are people that really influenced the nation. But how did they do that? They did it by focusing inward, by working on their own spiritual metabolism, their own quiet, peaceful communion with Hashem, their own midos, their own study, but with a very, very strong identification with the klal, a concern, a care, a desire to see the klal connect with Hashem just like he had, as an outgrowth of his own relationship with God, not separate from, not that my job is to affect them. My job is to connect with Hashem, and I'd like everyone to connect with Hashem too. It's a different formula, it's a different recipe. And only somebody like that, only somebody who has perfected the prat in himself, can really be the klal person. And that is why the Jewish people have always looked and focused on those individuals, on those pratim, who represent the klal. And so often they have been people who have shunned the limelight. Of course, they cannot hide their righteousness, and they become known. Chafetz Chaim wrote about himself. He lived till 94. He said, I didn't start getting involved with communal matters until I was 60. What was he doing before then? He wasn't in the Chafetz Chaim Heritage Foundation publicity. He was sitting in a small village, studying Torah, writing his books, and learning inside how to love every single Jew and how to do whatever he could to bring them closer to Hashem, because that's what he lived for. The Chazon Ish did not even have a yeshiva, and yet everybody, when he became a seniority, nobody would make a move without asking, what does the Chazon Ish have to say about it? That's what a Manhig Yisrael is made of. This is not a topic which always gets discussed. No, Baruch Hashem, we have a wonderful, wonderful Jewish community, and anyone who was exposed to the yeshiva world knows exactly what I'm talking about, and yet it's kind of like an insider's view and doesn't always get publicized. But I've been thinking a lot about it in terms of our philosophical discussions, klal and prat, and it's always been nagging at me, and I think Rav Volba helps us understand the dynamics. That once again, that true identification with the klal comes through a strong identity with Prat. His dafka, it's specifically somebody who is very, very keen and very, very aware of his own unique relationship with God and his own unique set of circumstances. That kind of person, in a truthful, in a genuine way, first and foremost, that kind of a person is going to develop the identification with the klal. And the other ones, it's going to look like they're leading the klal, but really, it may very well be that they're leading the klal into their own self-centered motives. And that's not a service to either themselves or to the klal. These are things that we really should be aware of as we go through Sefer Bamidbar, because that's what's happening. That is what's happening. Every other parsha, there's a leader that hit the dust. And we need to focus in on what the Torah is teaching us and contrast between the people such as Aaron, Moshe, Yehoshua, and the people such as Korach and the Meraglim. So hopefully that will be some food for thought as we go through our own lives and as we develop the proper outlook in our Torah thinking.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you all for being so patient and quiet. Nobody asked any questions. I'm sure you're all bubbling over with questions. So please.
How do you compare the one with Moshe? How can you compare that? Balak had a dream at night. Well, Moshe could do it any time. It's a huge difference.
Well, it started off, Rabbi Weinberg asked the question, how could you compare them if Bilaam was a Rasha and Bilaam was evil? So he said, Bilaam didn't start off evil. He started off righteous. And he was, in fact, very, very close to the stature of Moshe. But he went sour.
Before or during this dream?
Rashi says somewhere that the reason why Hashem empowered Bilaam to be a prophet was so that the other nations of the world will not say at the end of days, no fair, you gave the Jewish people Moshe, but you didn't give us an equal chance. If you would have given us a prophet like Moshe, we would have followed the Torah also. That's what they're going to say at the end of days. To which God responds with, okay, I'll give you Bilaam. So Rabbi Weinberg asked, if he gave them a rotten apple, what kind of a fair response is that to their question? Mm-hmm. So from this he concluded that Bilaam was righteous when he came up. But he corrupted himself. So that could have happened before this particular mission. But when he was first developing, he was just as good as Moshe. Herb.
Yes, sir.
You wanted to say something.
I was just going to ask, Bilaam was the son of Laban.
It says that in the commentary, right? Yeah.
How did he wind up with the, who was it, the Amorites?
Oh, you're saying that if he derived from Laban, how did he end up getting mixed up with other nations? That was your question?
That's right.
I'm not sure. I don't know exactly how the lineage went. That's not so well known that he was the son of Laban. That's one of those, you know, fine print things.
He was a sorcerer, that he worked for Paro. He was one of Paro's advisors, along with Yitro. There was Yoav, and there was a few advisors, sorcerers for Paro. And then he, from that position, was very high stature, like a prince.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be very easy for him to take over and be powerful and go mm-hmm. to near where his father came from. If that's, you know, according to the Midrash, either he would like the man that was his grandfather or well over in the time of Yaakov Avinu. You know, sometimes they say, like, was like a son because he was like a son, you know, meaning that's, I learned
had
that
the trait stuff?
Yeah, because I learned for sure that he was, at least as far as I can remember, that he was one of Paro's advisors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does that sound familiar? Because I heard that he was...
Is he one of those three that were asked what to do about the Jews in Egypt? Yisro, Bilaam, and Eof?
Eof.
Yeah? Coming back to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have to correct myself. He was a descendant mm-hmm. of Laban.
Right.
No,
like a son. That's,
I
but
see.
He was like him in trickster way, and that's why... There's one thing that bothers me about Bilaam, is that he still was able to possess his ability to connect with Hashem, even as he became a Rasha. Whereas we learn the only way to connect to Hashem on our list is the hierarchy. You have to be so pure and go to the highest level. Whereas Bilaam has the exact opposite. He starts out great, as you said. I was going to ask you how he started out and get to be such the leader of the Goyim, otherwise they wouldn't have a role model. He had to have been good at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But in his evilness, he becomes...
He could still connect with Hashem.
Yeah, it's like I'm jealous in a certain way. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to do, and then the Glam has a leader who becomes so Russia. I mean, he becomes the ultimate Russia, trying to hurt God's children. And he is able to have communication with Hashem. It's not.
Yeah, but you realize that kind of communication, it does not form an eternal bond. Mm-hmm. Because what it means to be close with Hashem is to be like Hashem,
mm-hmm.
to be righteous. So if you can, by using sorcery or other kinds of artificial means, get a message from Hashem, a nevuah, that doesn't make you really close to Hashem.
It's not close. I see. Beautiful.
You know, they're not going to go to Olam Haba with that.
Beautiful. Thank you.
It's just like sorcery.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.